Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Leo Laporte, episode 68 for May 9th, 2009. Cinelera and Lumiera. Floss Weekly is brought to you by the 2009 Google Summer of Code Project. The Google Open Source Program has announced the student projects they accepted for 2009, and their students are now busy coordinating with their mentor organizations and getting their code work underway. Get involved in the open source community at code.google.com/SOC and tell them you heard about it on Floss Weekly. Well, hello, everybody. We're about ready to begin Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz. You see him there on that little screen behind me there. That's the Randall. Wait a minute. That's not the Randall. That's the Randall. There's the Randall. Yes. And we're going to talk about a video product called Cinelera, which is very exciting.
Indeed. A nice full-featured, full-powered video editing suite. I haven't had a lot of time to play with it. I've at least looked at some videos of people using it, and it was really cool looking. I mean, I've done a little work in my time with Adobe Premiere and Final Cut Pro and a few other things that are nonlinear editing. In fact, I had a nonlinear editing system back in 1990? Is that right? Like an old...
Was it an Amiga? What was it?
No. The old 68040 based Mac, and there was some company out there, like a $2,000 nonlinear editing system. I had that, and I had only enough discs to hold 15 minutes of video. So I would bring in like three cameras, like 3 or 4 minutes of each. I was just doing music videos at the time, so it wasn't too bad. But we had Adobe Premiere, and I remember using that. And I remember it being really cool because I had all these vertical tracks of time. And anybody who's done stuff with like iMovie and stuff will recognize this. So it's like, you know, it's time one way, and it's video tracks the other way, and audio tracks below that matched up to the video. And that was sort of new because prior to that, I was editing stuff off audio or video tape. And I tell you have this A-B roll system where you have the two source tapes and the one destination tape. And every time you did a bump, of course, it ruined the video quality a little bit. So you tried to figure out how to get this piece of video next to that piece of video, next to that piece of video, and overlaid with that without copying it too many times because it was all analog. And so the nonlinear editing system was really cool because I could just say, insert this, cut that and stuff. And that's 1990. And look what we've got now. I mean, in 2009, we have... You know, where I've got this nice laptop and it'll run Final Cut Pro or something, or now Cinelera as I start to play with it. And you can do all this stuff with a small portable machine that I was taking racks of machines to do 15 years ago.
Well, we're going to talk with the guys behind Cinelera in a GIF in just a mm-hmm. little bit. Mm-hmm. We're going to also talk about the Google Summer of Code. Anything else you want to mention?
Oh, well, right at the end of last week's show, I said that I would be in Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah. How was yours talk? You were talking about small talk, right?
Yes. In fact, the title of the talk was called Dynamic Returns, and that actually had two different meanings. It was sort of like the return on investment you get from using dynamic languages, but also the fact that dynamic languages have seen a resurgence recently, fondly fueled by things like Ruby on Rails being now, you know, coming back into play and people sort of figuring out that things like Java and C#, C++ probably are slowing people down more than speeding them up. And so I did a nice about 35, 40 minute talk on why dynamic languages rule. And all the way through, I took 6 or 7 common myths about why people think that you need to have statically typed languages. That's a language where the variable has a type rather than the value having a type. Why they think that that's better. And I actually, I think pretty well convincingly nailed each of those 6 myths as being a myth and no basis.
Well, I have to read that because I always thought you wanted strongly typed languages.
Oh, careful. I'm not arguing against strongly typed. I'm arguing
just typing
static typing. Strong type, like Smalltalk and Perl and Python, Those are all strongly typed languages, but they're not statically typed. So that's the only distinction I'm making here. I'm arguing that dynamically typed languages like Smalltalk and Perl and Ruby and Python have their value. And in fact, productivity goes up when you use those rather than down.
But languages like Pascal, which is created to teach people proper programming, and I suppose Ada too.
Yes.
You'd have to declare a variable and you'd have to say what type it was, and that's it.
Exactly. Yep, yep. And that's
great. And that keeps you from making mistakes.
Well, to give you just a brief version of this, I mean, this isn't what, I don't want to go into an hour on what I did before, but in fact, actually, if you...
We can see the lecture, right?
Yeah, if you Google for industry misinterpretations, you'll find the podcast that's going to be running these as part of their stream. It's a podcast all about Smalltalk. I've been on the podcast 5 or 6 times already. So what they've done is the guy who does the podcast, James Robertson, recorded all of the audio and video. So he has my speech will be part of the audio track there, and in a separate video track that'll be nearby somehow. If you go to the site, it points to all of them. You'll be able to see this. And so, the, you know, it's great because I've done this. I'm also going to try to separate it out and just do a strict, like a webcast of it too. So it'll be a little bit easier to see because the problem with video is, you know, you're not going to be able to see the screen very well. But you hear what I'm saying. So it works out pretty reasonably okay.
So it's my fault. I'm the fool. You will set us all straight.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I look forward to that. Uh-huh. Now, let's see what else. So those will be available online. Uh-huh. I did see your slides, but, you know, slides, you know, there's a lot of gaps in between the slides. So
well, a proper slide also is
doesn't
almost
say everything.
Useless.
Yeah.
The point of a slide is to give the bullet points that the person then fills in. If every word a person has to say is on the slide, what happens is we put the slide up on the screen and then everybody starts reading that and they don't hear what you're saying.
Right.
So it can't be much more than simple bullets.
Right.
And, I've learned this over time. I mean, I actually taught a class in how to be a good presenter. And that's one of the things we said is don't read
put all your
slides.
Content in there. That's right.
Exactly.
That's
right. Exactly. So the slides are around, but it's not as good as having me actually do it. So,
well, I'm sure we have some great shows coming up, and we'll get to that in a little bit mm-hmm. when after we talk to our guests. Let me get mm-hmm. Joel and Aaron on the line. I think Joel in Britain?
Oh, wait, are you going to go to Google Summer of Code first?
Oh, yeah. Almost forgot.
I'm reading up his shoulder there, Leo, and I'm seeing that there's Google Summer of Code to still talk about.
I almost forgot. Of course there is. How could I forget Google Summer of Code? We want everybody to go to code.google.com/SOC. The summer starts soon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The program's been around since 2005. It's in its fifth year. 2,500 students have been brought together by Google to write millions of lines of code to benefit open source programs. And that's what's really cool about this. So the way it works is companies or organizations submit open source project ideas. They apply to be officially mentor organizations. And then once the ideas are submitted, Google picks them. About 150 get accepted. And then the students go to the website. Usually these are comp sci students all over the world. They apply. They get accepted. They get to write software for, you know, for burgeoning open source projects. They get to kind of get their feet wet in the real world. It helps the open source projects identify and bring in new developers. It's just great all around. And I'm really glad that Google does this. You can be a mentor organization if you want. Consider it. The idea is that we're going to get more open source code created and released for the benefit of everybody, to inspire developers, young developers in particular, to begin participating in these projects and give them some real world exposure. So begin a conversation with the Google open source community today. If you want to participate next year, it's a good time to get started now. If you are a group running an active, free or open source project like the Python Software Foundation, you're eligible. The project does not have to be a legally incorporated entity. You do have to produce and release software under one of the open source initiative approved licenses in order to participate. You can read the previous year's mentor organizations. Go to code.google.com/SOC. They've got all the previous years. And make sure when you do apply, you tell them you heard about it on Floss Weekly. Because we want them to know that our listeners are very active in this particular area. You got an email, didn't you, from somebody?
In fact, yes. Just in the last day, I had an email from a Ryan Jendoubi. I'm so sorry, Ryan, however your last name is pronounced. He's in the School of East Asian Studies at the University of Sheffield in the UK. And he wrote to thank me for talking about Google Summer of Code. He says he had applied, not quite as a result of hearing about it from us, but was thankful that we're telling other people about it too. But he was accepted into the Pearl Foundation area.
Fantastic.
So he'll be working on Pearl Code, something related to the Pearl Project anyway. And that will be, he'll get paid for that. He'll get experience from that that he put on his resume. And we'll get something valuable out of it, typically, for the Pearl community. I mean, a lot of things in the past, Google Summer of Code things have become part of our, especially the Pearl 6 effort. A lot of the Pearl 6 stuff now was worked on by some Google Summer of Code students. Testing was done last year, things like that. So it's very nice that that Google is providing, you know, this sort of opportunity for experienced projects that could use some help, together with students who need to find their way into having something to do besides flip hamburgers for 3 months. I mean, it works out really nice.
Well, thank you, Google. We appreciate your support, and we invite everybody to go visit and find out more at code.google.com/SOC. All right. Hey, we've got our guests on the line, minus a little bit of an edit there so that you didn't hear all the machinations we had to go through. Joel Holdsworth is in the UK. Hi, Joel.
Hi, how you doing?
Great to have you on board. And also in Cincinnati, Aaron Newcomb. Hi, Aaron.
Correct. Hey, good to be back on again.
Oh, yeah, that's right. This isn't your first time. In fact, you were the one who introduced us to Cinelera, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was on the show about ZFS, and you had mentioned Cinelera, and I said, hey, I know about Cinelera, so...
Oh, so who was it, Randall, who told us? Because I think you and I were both surprised to hear that there was an open source nonlinear editing solution.
Well, you were talking about the fact that that Aaron's show was completely edited with open source stuff, and then he mentioned Cinelera.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I happen to have it on the future list. So that's
okay. There we go. Yeah. Yes. So Aaron does a podcast called The Source Show, or The Source, I guess it is.
The Source, yeah.
At thesourceshow.org.
Correct.
And is that about open source?
It's all about open source. Yep, the whole thing. So not only right now, I've been doing a lot of interviews. So if you look on the site right now, you'll see interviews with John Mad Dog Hall and John O'Bacon and some other folks. But I do some other content as well. I try to do some reviews when new stuff comes out and things like that.
And you edit it with Cinelera.
Yeah, it's all edited with Cinelera. In fact, the entire show is produced with open source software. So
that's pretty cool. I can't say that for us. I'm sorry to say.
Now, at the beginning of the show, I actually talked a little bit about
we'll get you there.
What a nonlinear editing system was like. But can you describe really who the target audience for Cinelera is and how they would get into using it and what purposes they would use it for?
Yeah, sure. So Cinelera is, as you know, a video editor, and it's really targeted more towards the professional who wants to, put together a little bit more you could do with your video editor. So it goes beyond just wanting to, maybe take a couple of family videos and do a couple transitions and upload it to YouTube. This is something where you want to get maybe more advanced effects to use. And perhaps you have not just one or two sources, but you have 5 or 6 audio tracks and 4 video tracks. You're mixing back and forth between them and so forth. So it's really more along the lines of an Adobe Premiere or a Final Cut Pro.
So the point of this, though, is that it's not just me taking, say, I shot my family vacation and I wanted to somehow just take out a few of the scenes I didn't like. This is more for... I want to put them together, maybe even have what we call it, a transition to go from one to the other, maybe like a dissolve or a wipe or something. And you might want to describe what those are. So this is more for that. This is for a little bit more advanced editing then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is where you might want to do some screen effects, or you might want to bring in some graphics, some advanced graphics, and put, like I do, lower thirds, for example, on my show. I'm talking about a particular website, you'll see a lower third pop up. Granted, it's not as easy to use as, say, a Kino or a more basic video editor, but yeah, it's for advanced users who want to put out maybe broadcast quality type shows.
Now, you just said a couple of other terms that our audience at home might not be aware of, like lower thirds. What are those?
All right. So lower third, actually, for those that are watching, you can see a lower third right now up underneath my name. Actually, it's basically whenever you see some text or some words pop up on the lower third of the screen. So as you're watching a show and somebody is interviewing someone, usually their name and title will pop up on the bottom of the screen so you know who they are. And that's what a lower third is.
So I could use like iMovie, which is a proprietary software, to cut together some video and apply whatever effects Apple wanted me to use on my videos. But you're saying Cinelera goes beyond that and lets me do even fancier things like lower thirds and like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously there's some good software out there that allows you to do some canned things generally. And you can make some really good stuff with some of that entry level software, but yeah, this goes way beyond what you can do there. And also, because Cinelera is open source, you know, you could actually, if there's something there that you wanted to do and maybe you couldn't find it as an effect, for example, or something, you know, people are always welcome to contribute code. So you can actually add an effect, to the software.
Now, speaking of the open source part of this, I understand from researching for today's show, there's actually three products we're talking about here. There's the original Heroine Warriors product called Cinelera. There's the Cinelera CV, which does happen to be open source. And then there's a new project called Lumera. And I think that's why we have Joel on today. Joel, do you want to talk a little bit about Lumera?
Yes. Well, Lumera is, I suppose, the successor to Cinelera. It follows on. It's a complete rewrite of, it aims to do everything that Cinelera does, but do it a lot better.
Oh, well, that's always handy. Then what main differences? Now, you said, wait a second, you said rewrite? Are you throwing away the existing code and starting over?
Yes, at the moment, we haven't been able to use any of the code from Cinelera at all directly. But that's not so bad, because when Cinelera started, it started before there were widespread availability of powerful libraries, whereas now, you know, there are so many options for libraries that you can use that actually we don't have to write such a huge amount of code to make a functional video editor the way Cinelera did have to. So we're aiming to have our own video pipeline, but it can be put together with lots of bits that are free and open source and available for everybody.
What language was Cinelera written in, and what language is Lumiere written in?
I believe Cinelera is written mostly in C, and Lumiere is being written in C and C++.
Okay. Yeah, I think Lumiere
and Lua actually.
Well.
A script for the scripting.
Yes, that's right. So we're trying to add an element of sort of flexibility to it, so that it's a bit more versatile, and Lua allows us to do that in a way that's we're looking into, but it's looking quite promising.
Now, where can I find Lumiere?
Well, you need to go to lumiere.org. And where can you actually find it? Well, I don't know what you mean by find it. Find the project page. Lumiere.
No software yet, though.
There's no there's no specific thing to actually have yet. Well, you can download the Git tree if you want to and compile it. You can see the GUI, although that's not connected to a functional backend just yet. But we're getting there. We're getting there.
So would it be fair to say that Lumiere is inspired by Cinelera, or is it really the heir apparent? I mean, do you imagine that everybody that's currently using Cinelera would eventually go to Lumiere?
We'd hope so, yes. I mean, it's you wouldn't want to lose any features from Cinelera. We don't plan to step backwards. It aims to satisfy the same audience. But in the long run, end up going further than Cinelera does and end up doing it better as well.
So I think, is the rewrite just to make it more maintainable, or is it you're just looking to have a new base so you can really add a lot more features to it?
Well, I think the problem was that there are problems with Lumiere and with Cinelera. There is a big problem with the way the accessibility and availability is one of these projects, rather like OpenOffice, that is free and open, but it isn't a community project. So it's very hard for the community to have any influence on it. And we have a problem whereby the code that's being put out is quite spaghettied and tangled up. So it's very hard to actually patch it. And it's very hard to fix the problem at the root. Now, Cinelera CV have been sort of valiantly trying to maintain a series of patches to release an improved version of Cinelera for the community. But, there's a limit to how far you can go. And it seems like there are some problems that really need to be, deep down problems that need to be tackled in a big way. But because the project isn't a community project, it's very difficult to, you can't send the fixes upstream. So the question is, what do you do? Well, Lumiera aims to just start again and not fall into the same traps that Cinelera does and do it in a way that's community open.
So when Heroine Warrior released this, they didn't release it as a fully open source project.
Well, actually,
under what terms did they release it? How did that work?
Yeah, so they released the code as open source, and the problem was that they're kind of a quiet group, and so they were happy to release the code, but they weren't really open to starting or to accepting code from outside sources to feedback in there, as Joel just said.
Well, that's kind of weird. So it was just kind of a static project.
Yeah, exactly. So the code was open source, but again, you couldn't really contribute back. Well, that was discussed early on, whether people should do a fork or do what eventually ended up happening was create the community version. That's Cinelera CV. The reason was because so many people thought there was great potential there. They really wanted to fix some things, for example, compatibility issues from one distribution to another. I mean, you could have lots of problems there. And without being able to contribute those kinds of changes back up, they were really stuck. So luckily, Cinelera CV did receive at least support from Heroine Virtual in terms of being able to go ahead and start the project. They didn't complain about, you can't do that. So they were able to start it. And then that's the place really where all of these changes, bug fixes, patches, as Joel was talking about, would come in and be applied there. So that's been one point of confusion, I think, among people as they hear about Cinelera and they want to go download it. And depending on, how Google is feeling that day, they type in Cinelera.
You get different results.
Yeah, exactly. So they may try to install the Cinelera from the Heroine Virtual site, and it may not work because they're running Gentoo or something. And then they get frustrated and they give up. And all the time, they didn't realize that there was Cinelera CV, which is, really providing those patches and compatibility things.
So at this point, if you're going to want a usable system, is this what you use for the source?
Exactly.
You use Cinelera CV as opposed to...
Exactly.
And that's Cinelera. Exactly. So let me see if I cut through all of this. So Cinelera CV is the... It's kind of a fork, I guess, it sounds like, of the Heroine Virtual Cinelera. That's at Cinelera.org, Cinelera.org. And then Lumiera will be a fully open source kind of start from scratch, but inspired by Cinelera, and that's at Lumiera.org.
Exactly. Yep.
I got it.
Could I have made this more complicated for you, Leo? I don't think I could have.
It's not your fault. In a way, this is, as great it is as it is that Heroine Virtual released it, it is an object lesson for any company that wants to release source code to the open source world that you have to kind of consider making it a project, right?
Right. Yep, it's all about community, and I've had this conversation with other folks. I think John O'Bacon and I were talking about this. I mean, you can't really have, is open source really open source without the community, right? Otherwise, it's just a bunch of source code.
It's technically open, but
technically,
it's,
right?
But it's not an open source project in the way we know them.
Right. Exactly. It's not practically open. Right. Yep.
So what could they have done? GPL'd it? Would that have solved the problem?
Yeah, I don't think the problem was really with the license. The problem was just more not really... Not creating a community and not really wanting to maybe participate in a community effort.
Well, and I can understand that. I mean, they may have had limited resources to do so. Their heart was in the right place. They said, well, we're going to give it away. I mean, I could think of a lot of dead software projects that I would love to see continue on in an open source community, but just giving people the source code is not enough to do it.
Exactly. I mean,
Leo, we've seen an example of this already before. The UE stuff originally was published open, so anybody could take it and do what they wanted to with the Yahoo user interface library. But Yahoo wasn't set up to actually really do anything more than accept bug reports from the outside. They weren't really set up to accept full patches or even a collaborative, cooperative changing of the code. And in the year since we've interviewed them, maybe a year and a half now, it seems like at least a year, they've now actually published a Git tree that they'll take direct Git patches directly upstream. And so it's quite a change in the way they're doing that. And it sounds like if Heron Warrior had done the same thing, we wouldn't really have needed the CV version, and we wouldn't even necessarily be in a position where Lumiera starts to be more interesting for people.
Yep, you're absolutely right. But luckily, I mean, we've got the Lumiera project now. It's got a lot of great potential, I think. And of course, Joel mentioned the GUI. That's been one of the complaints about Cinelera so far, is that the ease of use is sometimes not quite there for everybody.
I'm also got a complaint from the friend feed conversation. Maybe a question. Why the system requirements keep moving up? He says, you know, if I had that much money to spend, I'd buy commercial software. Does Cinelera continue to demand more and more hardware?
That hasn't been my experience, put it that way.
Okay.
I'm running a AMD dual core system with, up till recently, I just had 2 gig of RAM, and I was doing all my editing on that.
All right.
So,
that's
pretty much a consumer system, I would think, at this point.
So, at this point, stay with CV, but keep an eye on Lumiera.
Exactly.
And don't count Aaron out.
Joel, what's your timeline?
Please contribute patches.
So, Joel, what's your timeline for this? How soon before I can get something where I can at least edit together my vacation video from Lumiera?
What answer might you expect to that from an open source project? What do people normally say when you answer that question?
If they're smart, they say nothing at all. Actually, they laugh. No, you can't. Are you the sole developer? You're not the sole developer by any means. Are you, Aaron? I mean,
no, not at all. We have three of us who are contributing code at the moment: myself, and Christian, and Herman, who are both from Germany. They nominated me to come on today because I'm a native English speaker. So there are three of us working away as hard as we can. What's the time scale? It's quite a long way away yet. We've got a lot of work to do, but things are coming along. In fact, if you look at our lines of code graph on Olo, you can see that the project's slowly growing and growing and growing. Basically, I suppose the big message to go out to everyone is that we need lots and lots and lots of developers. We need lots of help, and I think really it would make a lot of sense for people to help, because I think this is one area that for the whole free software world is a real weak spot. We don't have a strong video editor, so if you really want to help the free software world in a big way, come and contribute code to Lumiera.
Yeah, and not only code too. I mean, I would throw in that what would be really nice is to have people like Alex Lindsay, for example, who knows this world really well, to be able to go and contribute ideas. Say, hey, here's what I can't do with the proprietary software I have. Here's some things that I would like to see. Could you work this possibly into the project? And I think that would be really helpful as well. So not just code, but also people that are users, professional editors and otherwise, who just want to come and say, look, here's what I can't do today. Is this something possibly you could work into the project?
Currently, you're meeting on IRC, so anybody can participate anywhere. And that's every month? Is that every month?
Absolutely. Joel? And join the mailing list.
And join the mailing list, of course. All of that information.
Yes, we meet up. Yeah, join the mailing list, get on IRC, all that. Yeah.
And clearly C++ is a skill, working with libraries. What kind of libraries are you using? You said you're using existing libraries. What are some of the ones that you're using in your project that if people are familiar with, they can help you out?
Well, of course, there's GAVL, which is forming the backbone of our video processing. So That's part of G Merlin. And we, of course, the front end's being built with GTK. Of course, everyone knows GTK and GDL as well, which some other projects use. So, there are a few coming in, and it seems like we're acquiring more and more each day. But I think the main thing really is that the library support that we have generally is strong enough. We just need to put them together into a project. So we're in a really great situation. We have this whole world of libraries to pick on, but we just need to put them together into a working project.
You say on the website that the first part of the process is engine development, and then you're going to work on a UI. In fact, you've just begun UI work right now.
Well, that's not sort of strictly true. I mean, I think the thing is, the things are coming along in different orders. So the project is split into three layers. And the top layer is the layer that the user gets to see. So if you've seen any screenshots of the GUI work that's going on, you can see that it's beginning to sort of resemble a working GUI editor. Which you can see online. But the thing is that we still have a little bit of work to do on the back-end layers, and those are coming along slowly and surely. We're getting towards the stage where we can begin to try and integrate all three layers together, and once we have that, then what you have is a working video editor.
Is the goal to do something that's a real-time editor? Is there some way? I know one of the things that's cool about iMovie is that it really takes advantage of the hardware of my machine to use all the nice graphics processor stuff to overlay stuff in real time, so it's not a matter of waiting until something
instant rendering. Yeah.
Yes. Is that sort of something you can that's in Cinelera already and will be in Lumera as well?
No, it's not in Cinelera, not real time anyway. What you can do in Cinelera, which is very interesting, there's a couple things that would help with that. Number one, Cinelera is written so that it takes advantage of multiple cores, of course. So if you have two quad-core processors, you can use all eight cores. The other thing that's really interesting with Cinelera that you can do is you can do distributed rendering. So you can actually, if you've got five or six old PCs lying around, you could actually set up a job just like you can in most professional environments where you want to split up the workload. You can do that. And so, if you need very quick rendering like that, you could set up a job to do that and, cut down your rendering time dramatically.
Hmm. How does Heroine Warrior feel about the forking of Cinelera? And I mean, obviously they support it because they've got this open source software out there. But I mean, obviously in some ways, the whole appearance of Lumera must have a few of them sort of cringing a little bit, wouldn't you think?
They're like I said, they're a pretty quiet group, so we haven't gotten a lot of feedback from them on it. There was a little bit of feedback, which is initially when people were starting to talk about developing a new video editor, they wanted to make sure that we didn't use the Cinelera name. So there was a naming competition to come up with a new name for the new project. But other than that, they haven't said a whole lot about it. I will say that in the past, they've been very supportive of the Cinelera CV effort in terms of, they would actually point people towards Cinelera CV if someone came and started asking a question or something like that. They were very good about saying, well, you may want to check out Cinelera CV instead. So, but overall, they're a fairly quiet group, so we haven't had a whole lot of feedback. Maybe Joel knows more than I do, but I believe that there hasn't been a lot of feedback on that.
What is their business? Did they make other editors, NLEs?
This is it as far as NLEs go. I mean, they've got a couple other products. If you go to the website, you can see a couple other products or projects that they're working on. But as far as NLEs go, Cinelera is it and really has been the major one since about 2003.
They're not still selling it though, are they?
They're not selling it, but it's really an unknown. My thought has always been that they were developing this to sell it or to, because they were working with maybe a studio or something like that. But to be honest, not a lot of information on that.
The mystery company.
Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's, what can you say? I mean, they've released this great code. And so definitely we're not complaining. They've, over the years, they've been, like I said, been very kind to everybody. So just the fact that we have this great code is, you know, good enough, I think.
We're not knocking it.
That's right.
How much of Cinelera is a roadmap for you, Joel, as you're working on this, on Lumiera? Do you look back at the Cinelera code? Or, I mean, I know you've scrapped it.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think although there are many things that people like to gripe about Cinelera, me more than anyone, there are many things that Cinelera does quite well. And I think, you know, what everyone in the world is crying for is a sensible nonlinear video editor that gets the job done. And in lots of ways, Cinelera does. And there are lots of great things to copy about it. I mean, it has a layout that isn't radically unlike what you'd expect in a nonlinear video editor. It has a timeline that behaves, well, much like many other timelines that people are used to. Media management is nothing spectacular, but it does it. It does get the job done, even if it's not pretty. Now, some people would sort of say, well, with a new project, well, let's make something that's totally radical. Let's make it 3D and OpenGL, you know, radical experimental interfaces. And I think the problem is that I'm not sure a project like that will go the distance. And I'm not sure that really a project like that is what people want. People are looking for a video editor that behaves the way they expect. So, and Cinelera in lots of ways is worth copying in that regard. Now, where we come in is to try and take the parts which are good and not take the parts which are bad, so that we end up with something that is innovative and forward-looking, but isn't radically different from what you'd expect, so that it doesn't look like it's come from Mars and it's all confusing. It behaves in a way that's useful to real people to get stuff done.
And that makes sense, because you really, you know, you don't need a lot of fancy GUI to really get the job done. What you need is for the GUI actually to sort of get out of the way, because you want to put this piece of video here and you want to move it so that's there, and you want to pull that together. You just want it to work. And, you know, I've seen people go overboard on interfaces.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's right. I think the thing about interfaces is that it's a very, very difficult thing to get right. And it's something, well, I'm very glad that it's something that, well, that's something I've taken direct responsibility for on the project, getting the interface just right. And it is a sense of finding that sweet spot between having not too much user interface elements around the place, so that it crowds your work out and looks all confusing, but not too little as well, so that you can discover the commands you want to use. We want to create something that people look forward to using, and when they come to use it, it feels the way they expect. User interfaces, a lot like a lot of technology that's very good, is something that when it's good, you don't notice it. You just notice that it feels nice. And that is a success. If we can get that, then I'll be very, very happy.
Well, it sounds really great. Are you planning on implementing just the features of existing Cinelera first, or do you want to leave some of those out and optimizing for a few things that you really, really, really wanted and kind of drove you to the project in the first place?
Well, I think the thing about it is that you always build a project like this in stages. So it begins being very simple, very trivial sort of editor that can just hack a few clips together. And with time, it will take on features slowly by slowly. And that has been our plan. We do want to make something. I mean, we've really got our view set ultra, ultra high. We want to have something that can compete with the big boys like Final Cut Pro and Combustion and things like that. Something that can actually compete and be useful in the professional video editing world. Now, of course, that is a long way off, and that's beyond what we'll get to certainly within the next year or two. But if we keep that in mind and don't close the door on those things, then, well, one day we'll get there. But in the meantime, what we're hoping to have is a basic video editor that, as time goes on, it sort of can take on more and more features and become more and more flexible, more and more useful for more extreme types of editing.
That sounds like a really wonderful goal there. And Aaron, in the meanwhile, of course, you can be using Cinelera CV and do what you need to do with a completely open source project as well. Is that true?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it works today. Some people complain for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, they don't like the interface. And my response always is, if you look at the interface of Cinelera and look at any of the other major video editors on the market, professional video editors, they're all pretty confusing, actually. And it's the one that you get used to is the one you like, right? I mean, it just takes time, just like with anything. It takes time to get used to something. But there are improvements we can certainly look forward to in Lumiera. The other one is that, Cinelera does crash. It's not the most stable software in the world.
No.
But the one thing...
No.
I know. Amazing, isn't it?
Imagine that.
but one of the nice things about it is it does use the edit decision list is all written in XML. And it writes that every time you do something. So you make a cut or you put in a transition or you add a new piece of media, it does write to that XML file. So if the system does crash, there's actually a button under the file menu that says, I forget it, restore from backup or something like that. And it brings you right back to the last thing that you did in the editor. And the XML file is also really useful for changing out things. Sometimes it's quicker, especially if you're a programmer. So just go in and edit the XML file directly if you want to change out one video for another video, but keep all of your transitions in place, et cetera, et cetera. You can just go into the, I've done it multiple occasions. You go into the XML file and do a search and replace for a particular file or something and fire up Cinelera and sure enough, everything's right where you want it to be. So
it's not geeky enough that you want to do video editing. You're also telling people to edit XML. This is great. That's like uber geek. Okay. That's just like, I'm not just an artist. I'm an artist with a technical thing. And I know how to edit XML with a text editor. Wonderful. that's way over the top.
Yeah. That's just my background. And you know, occasionally it's just easier to do things on the command line. So
how well do you divide by 29.97 in your head?
Not very well.
You know, I saw you on one of the things that you sent in prep for the show. You said, please watch me talk about Cinelera. And you said, we're going to set this to 30 frames a second because that's how fast the TV goes. And I wanted to tell you, no, 29.97.
Exactly. You got me on that one.
Oh, that is nitpicking.
I got to show my geekiness somehow, Leo.
That is very nitpicking.
I'm impressed. That's great. That's great that Randall actually knew that.
Now, do you know why it's 29.97?
No,
and
I
not
don't.
30? Leo,
why?
Do you know this?
No, I don't know.
Leo.
I did know it was 29.97, though. Does that
You're
Do I get credit
guy.
For that?
You get credit for that. Do you know why, though? Do you know why?
No, I have
The
no
thing
idea.
Is, because of 60 hertz power, they wanted to make sure that if there was a bleed of the 60 hertz voltage somewhere into the picture, that it would slowly crawl through. So they knew that it was making the picture change a little bit. If it stayed in sync,
right.
It might make the top a little darker and the bottom a little lighter, right. And they wouldn't know.
Fascinating.
Wow. I'm showing my geekiness now. I get the award for the last 30 minutes. Okay. Well, Aaron, what else would you like us to know about Cinelera before we have to wrap this up?
Well, first of all, I mean, I would tell you that, I've done a number of tutorials and there's some other ones listed on the Cinelera CV website. So, anybody that's looking to get started in this, I would recommend watching those tutorials or certainly reading through the manual a little bit just to kind of familiarize yourself with the way the software works. I found myself when I was first starting to use Cinelera completely lost until I finally said, okay, just like everybody else, no one reads the manual, right? Mm-hmm. So finally, I said, okay, I just have to read the manual a little bit. And as soon as I did that and started using it a little bit more, I realized how powerful it was. So I would definitely make that recommendation. Mm-hmm. Also, you may want to go check out on Vimeo. There's a channel of videos that have been made with Cinelera. So if you're kind of curious as to some of the things we're talking about, like lower thirds and some things that people have done with Cinelera, you can go to, I believe it's vimeo.com/groups/Cinelera, and you'll see a whole feed of videos there that people have created with Cinelera and might give you some ideas of some of the things that you can do with it.
That's cool. And Joel, any last things you want to say, call to action for fellow volunteers for Lumiera?
Yeah, I think we need your help. Anyone, it's not just developers, it's people with any kind of interest in the project at all should get involved with it, because we need all the help we can get if we're ever going to get anywhere. But we're coming along, so hold out and keep following the project.
Very cool.
It's exciting. I agree that we need, this is exactly what we need, is it's a one big gap in open source software is a nonlinear editor. And so I'm glad that this project is working. I'd love to trade in that $1,200 Final Cut Studio for something better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate your time. And Aaron, again, thanks for turning us on to Simulera. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, take care, absolutely. Joel. No problem.
Keep up the good work. So I apologize if you're listening to the lag. When we talked to Joel, he was having some severe network congestion. But, you know, it worked.
You know, the problem is going to the UK. It's the bits have to switch from the right-hand side of the wire to the left-hand side of the wire. You know,
it's big Endian versus little Endian.
You know, it was really funny because when the internet started, back when they were coming up with domain names, here goes my geekiness again. But when the internet started with domain names, everybody else in the world had, you know, blah, 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 .com. Well, the UK, and only in the UK, did they start at the beginning, uk.com.whatever.
Co.uk, yeah.
They started with
uk.com?
Yeah, they went from the other direction. It was like uk.whatever.
Oh, I see.
Because it went to the right rather than the left. And we were laughing, and it's like, it's just like the fact they're driving on the left-hand side of the road. They're also got their domain names backwards. And it was eventually they realigned with us, so it was nice. But it was, least the first year or two of the internet, their addresses were all backwards. It was pretty funny.
But there's no guarantee one way or the other. I mean, there's no there's no natural right way. So I think it's perfectly reasonable to say goes from the more general to the less general, as opposed to from the less general to the more general.
Well, now, you know, it's funny with this particular project with Simulera. You know, I don't want to fault the company because I don't know much about them, but it's like this might be used as a template of not quite how to do open source software.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's great that Heroine Warrior released the source code to Simulera so that people could take it and build on it and even fork it if they wanted to. But unless you're willing to take the patches upstream, unless you're willing to take what's coming in and incorporate it back into your product, you're open source in name only. I mean,
your code is open, but nothing else.
Yeah. Because really, as we've seen, and you and I, Leo, have talked now to project after project after project, and the thing that makes projects successful is this community around the open source, where a company producing a proprietary piece of code makes it open, or maybe just a group of people getting together as a community effort from the beginning. What's made it work is to have a community that can provide the first tier support and suggest changes and do bug fixes and stuff. And unless you're willing to incorporate that back into the core product, there's really not any gain to it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And this is an example of that. Now, of course, it's great because, you know, from like you put a piece of sand in an oyster and you get a pearl out of it at the end, most of the time anyway. You know, here's the sand in this oyster was that Simulera did whatever they did, or Heroine Warrior did whatever they did. And now we're going to get Lumiera. And it's going to be Lua scriptable and, you know, using modern libraries and things. So, It's okay. But, you know, just an object lesson for those of you out there that are thinking you want to be open source and name only, please don't. Or at least think about the next step of it. So there you go.
Yeah, that's and they were so reluctant to say anything negative about
It may just be that nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
People are kind of like,
well, if you're a small company, you've got a project, you can't really create a community or anything. It seems to me that the way to do this is to open source it as with a GPL license.
Which it sounds like they did, or else you wouldn't have...
I guess it must have been GPL, huh?
Right, because otherwise you'd be able to drive stuff from it. So I forgot to ask about license. That's usually my question, but I just got a little distracted with everything going on here.
Well, I did mention the license, but he said it wasn't really the lack of a license. It was the lack of a community. But, that's kind of a big onus to lay on a company that says, look... Well, I'll give you an example. Visual Hub, you know, it went away. It was a Mac project. Mm-hmm. Would have been great if the guy had just said, well, here's the source code. But if you can't just walk away from it like that, if you have to say, then the reason he walked away was he wasn't going to do anything anymore. There has to be, I guess you look for an advocate. You look for somebody who's going to say, okay, I'll take this on. I'll build a community around it. Right. I mean, if you're not going to do it, who...
Imagine, for example, if Ruby on Rails, which became an open source project built out of what the guys in 37 Signals did behind the scenes, what if they hadn't really set up a community around that, but just simply kept publishing their source code and not really letting anybody else sort of contribute back to them to make things better and
fancier? Is that the key, is letting upstream, getting upstream contributions?
I think so. I think that's a good part of, or at least recognizing that your community may be smarter than you about some things.
Right.
You know, I think there's an arrogance to saying we don't want to accept patches from the outside world because because we know and we own the technology, we understand how this works.
Right.
And I think there has to be an arrogance to that a bit. I would have to think that. And so it's great when we have the opportunities. We've seen these projects that have been opened and just really, I know from the UI guys, they're getting a lot of feedback from having opened up their code recently to really make it so they can accept.
Yeah, you gave that example. That's a really good example. Because I mean, UI on the face of it is a great project, great idea. Uh-huh. And mm-hmm. and they opened it, but they weren't getting that buzz that you get.
When jQuery, the John Resick, you know, it was originally just a published source, and then he opened it up so people can make contributions. So that also same sort of thing went on. It's definitely a lesson in community and community building. Speaking of community building,
yes, sir.
I have a special announcement for you, Mr. Leo. Do you remember all the way back to, like, what is it, 3 weeks ago? 4 weeks ago?
No, in that case, I don't remember it. Far too long ago.
When we had Mr. John O'Bacon on our show.
I love John O. Yeah, I remember that very well.
And you remember that offhand remark that I said at the end of, you know, we had to get him back more often and do flossing with bacon?
I do remember that.
Well, he got assuaged by his fans to say, my God, you've got to do that.
Oh, good.
So, just our fans yelling at me to get that to happen. So Jono recently contacted me and said, let's do it. Let's put it together. And so he is going to be on next week's show. We are talking with the guys from the Open Moco project.
Oh, cool.
And this will be interesting because, you know, again, OpenMoco, the hardware phone that they wanted to use for it has gone away. But OpenMoco is used in a lot of other things, and they're continuing to look for other plan B for their hardware. So John O'Bacon will be helping us interview Christopher Hall of OpenMoco. So this will be a little bit of experiment because, you know, we'll have three hosts and one guest. I'm not sure how that's going
to We'll just gang up on them.
We'll have to figure out exactly how to make this protocol work, Leo. I don't know. Do you have any other shows where there's three hosts and one guest?
That's the first. That's the first.
Here's Floss Weekly again, pushing the bounds.
Breaking the rules left and right. We'll figure out a way to make it work.
So anyway, so Jono's on that. I also am trying to schedule a time with him. I love you guys. You're writing me, especially at my new address. You're writing me at floss@twit.tv. Please feel free to continue to write me about that. But also, a bunch of people asked me why we didn't talk to Jono about the release of Ubuntu that just came out. We mentioned it like briefly, but they really wanted to hear a lot more about it. So Jono and I are trying to figure out a time that we can get together to kind of do a much more longer show of that. And whether it's recorded during the normal Floss time or not, I'm not sure, because I really want to have a lot of other guests in here. I want to get in the slot. So, but if not, we'll make sure it's a special edition of Floss Weekly to get it out for you guys. Anyway, so also coming the following week, we've got Ken Gilmer of Bug Labs. That's a hardware open source. That'll be a lot of fun. Just recently scheduled, we added to the schedule, which, by the way, you can go to at twit.tv/floss and take a look at the upcoming guests. We have added Paul Frields. He's the head of the Fedora project.
Oh, which is fun.
Open source fork of Red Hat. It's actually used to be the Red Hat Community Edition, and so it got its own name, its own extension. And so they have a release scheduled for May 26th, and we have Paul coming in. I don't know how he's going to get any sleep, but he's coming in like the next morning talking to us.
That's exciting. So that's
fresh,
really exciting.
New release of Fedora, you know, Fedora 11, I think it is, the next major release. They come out with a release every 6 months. So he actually wrote me and said, I really want to be on your show. And I said, can you do it the day after your release? He goes, yeah, let's do it. So he'll be in fresh with all the new information about the release of Fedora. The following week, also just added to the schedule, we have Justin Clark Casey of the Open Simulator Project. This is effectively the open source version of Second Life.
Very interesting.
Virtual world. You know, Leo, every time I bring you something like this,
I do it.
You bring Twit into the next
I'm ready
layer.
To do it. We should have a 3D world, shouldn't we?
Well, when we talk to Justin, you'll have to ask him. Now, what's great about the Open Simulator from that is that it is compatible with existing Second Life clients. So you just take the standard Second Life client and you link it up with a separate address.
And that probably means that all of the stuff you design for Second Life works, too.
Exactly.
Oh, I can use. I can wear my nude suit.
No. Okay, we're going to have to draw some lines real quick. So anyway, so we'll be talking to him about that. And we've also got, immediately in the week following up, I'm looking forward to this interview. My dear friend, Tim O'Reilly of O'Reilly Media is
now,
coming
Now, can he
in.
Come into the studio? I mean, we're just a hop, skip, and a jump.
About it. We're talking to him about it. But he'll, if not, it'll be a really short phone call. We won't have a 4-second delay to the UK.
Well, that's true.
But yeah, Tim O'Reilly is going to talk about all things open source, past, future.
Fantastic.
You know, it was on Tim's watch that the term open source was created. So
he created Web 2.0 as well. This guy's been around.
I mean, and just the impact that Tim has had on open source software over the years, including, paying me pretty well over the years to do various conferences and books. And
things
he's
like your publisher, isn't he? Yeah.
Hey, that Learning Perl book that you have sitting on your shelf.
Well, I'll make sure that I arrange all the O'Reilly books on the top shelf there. Actually, it's going to take 3 or 4 shelves. I have a big collection of O'Reilly books. That'll be fun. All the animals will be on the top shelf.
That's very good. And on the short list, Monty of MySQL wants to talk to us. I'm just looking to figure out where a slot would be for him. That'll be a fun thing. He's going to talk about the Maria database, the fork of MySQL, because of all the recent stuff going
I'm very curious what their plans are and so forth.
Yep. So that's the shows we got coming up. All good stuff.
Great stuff.
Short schedule.
Great stuff.
You know, it's funny because every time I think back to the guests we've had on the past 5 or 10 weeks, then I think, well, who could I possibly get to keep topping that? And it's just a matter of, getting a little bit of time, putting in the couple hours a week I did it for the show.
Thank you for doing that. I really appreciate
that. The other time that you see here. Yeah, there we go. So that's very cool.
Well, I do appreciate it. And in fact, this show is becoming more and more kind of a record, to have all of these shows with conversations with all of these people. It's a wonderful thing to have. You can always go back and listen to the old shows and so forth.
Well, Leo, I got to tell you that about once every 4 days now, I get a piece of email suggesting you ought to have blah, blah on the show. And then I just Google for which episode it was and say, well, yeah, I think you ought to check out twit.tv/floss27.
Yeah.
Because we've had a lot of them on. It's been great. It's just been a lot of fun. And by the way, I got to put my Twitter plug in. Come on, twitter.com/Merlin with a Y. And if you watch that, you'll see when I'm doing karaoke live on Ustream. And a bunch of other things, and see my things about open source all the way through there. I try not to just tell what I'm having for lunch. I'm trying not to make it just that kind of a Twitter feed. I'm trying to put serious things in there. But
well, that's good. We're all looking for more meaty content in on Twitter, so that's a good thing to know. Go to twitter.com/MERLYN.
The only thing that was goofy was this morning as we're taping the show. It's 6th of May, so I say Sexto de Mayo, Montezuma's other revenge.
That's not weird. That's kind of funny. Every once in a while, a funny one's okay. Let one of those funny ones sneak in.
Try to keep it limited to that. So wow, what a good show again. I mean, talking to Aaron again, that was great. And by the way, I don't know if the people listening at home could pick up on this, but Joel is just 24.
He's if you could see his video, you'd know he's a kid. But he doesn't come across in his presentation.
Really amazing in how, that's the youth of today, as they say, that are really making this work. And I feel like, my grayer hairs are starting to show up again on the video. And it's like I'm getting old, but that's okay. Thank you guys for taking the reins and running with it like you can.
Take it from an old guy like me. That's what keeps you young, Randall's hanging out with the kids. Mm-hmm. The youths.
Always.
We love having our utes. Well, Randall, I really appreciate all you've done with Floss Weekly. We invite everybody to tune in next week. Now, there's a couple of ways you can listen to this show. Of course, we're on iTunes and the Zune, and we do an Ogg Vorbis version for those of you who won't use encumbered software on your Linux box. That's linked usually from the website, I think, at twit.tv/floss. But if it's not, it's exactly the same URL as the MP3 version, only instead of .mp3, it's .ogg.
And I'm not going to tell anybody that if they happen to go to Yahoo Pipes, they might be able to find a pipe in my particular set of lists that filters that correctly.
Oh, excellent.
I'm not saying that out loud. Why not?
What's wrong with that? That's great. It's Creative Commons. That's a legitimate mashup.
I love Yahoo Pipes, because one day I just said, you know, you kept telling me that the MP3 if you turn it to OGG would be an OGG feed. And I went, okay, there you go. So I don't.
Pipes is great. I got to learn how to use Pipes, because there's so many things you can do with that. That's a great service.
Exactly.
You can also watch us do it live. We do it now at 1:30 Pacific. That's 4:30 Eastern time on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. And we moved it up half an hour to make room for Ryan Trout show, which comes up at 6 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're in Europe, it's UTC is 18:30. That's when we do the show. We hope you'll join us on Wednesdays. You can watch the show live. And we watch the chat rooms. You can join us in our chats at irc.twit.tv. And we keep an eye on comments there and also on our friend feed, Twit Conversations Room. So it's a good way to interact with the show directly as it happens. Randall, we'll see you next week on Floss Weekly. Bye-bye, everybody.